What's the difference between bacon?
Mmm, bacon.
And
bacon!
It's in the prep, because flimsy microwave bacon can taste meh. That's why Wendy's oven bakes their bacon for crispy slices of applewood smoked bacon that taste. Place it on fresh, never frozen beef, and you've got a junior bacon cheeseburger. It's the star of Wendy's 4-for-4 meal. Yeah, for just $4, you get a JVC, 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke. Not to mention that crispy bacon that makes the 4-for-4 so deliciously different. At participating Wendy's for a limited time, offer includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii. Fresh beef available in the contiguous U.S. and Canada.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I'm your host, Angela Butler. Tonight, we have with us Dr. Willie Bailey. Dr. Willie Bailey works for Deli Products Corporation. How are you doing tonight?
Good Dr. Willie Bailey. How are you doing? Good. I'm excited.
I'm doing great. Okay. All right. How's it working with Bill Dudley, CEO, co-founder, and his wife, Eunice Dudley, of Dudley Products Incorporation?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been working with, I call him Dr. and Dr. Dudley, Mr. Dudley and Miss Eunice Dudley for about 18 years. And it's about 18 years. And I'll tell you, for me, it's still like a, it's almost like I had to pinch myself because they've achieved so much that it still seems unreal to me. For example, they have about a 54-acre Dudley campus, corporate campus in North Carolina, where we work at. And when you know that story, how he started out with $10, they were mentally retarded, and how they got together and built that from nothing, you see a hotel, a meeting center, a university there, schools. They probably have 30, 40 buildings all over the country, and they're known all over the world with their product. It's just still like a miracle to me. But I know where they come from. They're very spiritual people, godly people, and it's through the grace of God they've done that. Right now, even with all their wealth and all, they work extremely hard. They're very humble. If you didn't know that they were multimillionaires, you couldn't tell by their behavior in that regard. And I tell you, even though they're recognized as business people. Their real work is a commitment that Mr. Dudley made to God. If he helped him to succeed, he was spending his life helping others. And at 75, we just celebrated his birthday. He's still doing that. And, in fact, I work with him very closely. It's hard for me to keep up with him. So it's just an experience that it's just hard to believe, but it just shows you that God is good. And what happens when you do the right thing and try to help others, and he will bring a blessing to you. So I can tell you it's just a great experience, and I would invite everybody to just come and meet them and come and see the Dudley Complex, because we have a lot of tours for kids come by. It's just a great experience, but it shows us what we can do when we do the right thing.
So Mr. and Miss Joe Dudley and Miss Eunice Dudley are a great inspiration to you.
Oh, yes, they are. They are great. They're a great inspiration to me. And I still feel goosebumps even though I've been with them 18 years, because when you've been with somebody that long, you learn all about them, okay? And I can still tell you that 18 years, they are genuine people. They're known around the world. It's hard for him to go anywhere, either one of them, to go anywhere where people don't know them. He and I be riding in Florida, in your own state, and we'd stop at a truck stop and somebody would come over to the table. Aren't you Mr. Dudley? And he would laugh and say that. But it's just that it's not about him or her. It's about doing the work that they commit themselves to do. So that's what makes it, I think, easier for them to keep going.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. It's wonderful to hear such great things about people. How did you get your start?
Well, I started out, believe it or not, really used, started out professionally in your home state at Florida A&M University in my early 20s. I started out as a business professor there in the School of Business at FAMU. And I spent 18 years of my professional life, working in business schools at different HBCUs and other universities. And, of course, when I went through the ranks of full professor, And the last job was I spent time at A&T, Norfolk State, Fairview, as I said, Fairview State, and Winston-Salem State. And I enjoyed those adventures. I call it adventures because working with the young people and trying to find a way to help build businesses in our communities, it's just been an exciting adventure for me. It has not always been easy, but I felt that God didn't put us here to be nobodies and that we could do things. And he gave me, my gift was more on the academic side and the intellectual side. And so I've always just tried to use that to help any way I can in the business community. About 18 years ago, I decided to leave academia and go out in the business world, and I had some plans to start my own firm, and I wanted to hire a bunch of students. But as God would have it, I ended up meeting Mr. Dudley. He and I formed a partnership about 18 years ago, and actually, after leaving education in about 4 or 5 months, we had hired about 75 college students for different sales positions and different positions in the company at Dudley's. And from there on, we've gone and we've done just work together for many businesses for the last 18 years. Back in 2008, we've done a lot of business all over the world. We've done projects. I could just go through a whole litany of different things that we've done. But again, most of it successful. We've also learned some. Yeah, we've got some knocks. So that when we talk about business, it's not that. We've been golden all the time. We know about the ups and downs of it because that's the way it works. And 2008, he and I decided to sort of transition to do some other things in the company and let the younger teams take over, younger people take over. So he and I moved over to the education side of business. His children and other young individuals are now running the factories and the sales parts of the company, and they're very well qualified education-wise and everything else to do that. And we just want to be in a position where, at our age now, we can help them and make sure that those companies go on for more than one generation. And so for the last 2 or 3 years, he and I have been pretty much dedicated solely to education, helping and training business people all over the country. And that's what we're doing now.
Okay. What is your educational background?
Well, I'm from Mississippi, Mississippi. I went to Tougaloo College and I received a BS degree. I think I was from Tougaloo. And I was lucky enough to be a Dartmouth Fellow there, so I went off to the University of Illinois. And by the time I was 24, I had a PhD in economics there, and I left there and with a PhD back when I was about 24 years old, back in the early 70s, so that tells you how old I am. And
That's okay. You're going strong.
Hey, I can tell you, that's a story itself, I tell you. That's when I learned the power of prayer, because I tell you, some of those classes I was going, oh, my God, I didn't know the name of this class. But I was able to, with God's grace, to do a PhD for the bachelor's degree in 3 years, so that was not too bad. And so I went on there and went to academia. As I said, FAMU, so I started teaching at FAMU with Dr. Sue Mobley. And I talked there for a while. She's one of the great deans and business persons in this country. Having had a chance to work under her, it's like I had a chance to work under some of the best and brightest in the academic world, business world, business and academic world. I had a chance to spend 8 years with Dr. Craig at North Carolina A&T, FRI in North Carolina. I was head of the business department there. He was the dean. And 8 years of training under him and Dr. Marley, I felt I had the best training. Then I went off to Norfolk State and other schools, and I pretty much specialized in recruiting and helping the schools to get themselves set up to become national accredited and to work with graduate programs that HBCUs. That was interesting to me because many people felt that we were not qualified to offer graduate programs. So I took us like in the mid-84, I went to Fayetteville State and we started an MBA program there. In our first class, we had 45 students, and that program was off and running. And we were able to work with schools like Norfolk State, Winston-Salem State, and other schools, A&T, of course. And other schools were nationally accredited, which is very outstanding because you'll find the majority of business schools in this country, black or white, are not nationally accredited. And those schools are. So we're just so grateful to God to have that experience. But again, I learned so much, and it was just, I had just worked there, but I learned so much from those great leaders, and they're just a great testament. And those are resources that I would encourage our listeners to go to those schools and those places because there's some smart people there who really help. And they can help in but you'll be surprised. And that's just being thankful. That's sort of how what I've done. Yeah.
What are your positions at Dudley Hair Care Products?
Okay, with the main company, in 2008 I moved over. I was the head of my sales. I was senior vice president of sales for the whole company, international sales. Now I'm president of the Dudley Concertage University and vice president of the Dudley Houston Training Institute and vice president of marketing for the Dudley Manufacturing Company. So I got two or three hats, and in companies outside, if you usually wear two or three hats, and I tend to be a type A person, so I have to be working. So those are the three things I do right now. And plus I have my own company with my son called Building Quality Distributors, and we sell Dudley products all over the world also. The independent company, and one of my goals was to be able to go in business with my children. So I have a son and a daughter, and they are business-wise, they're in real estate, and they're doing very, very well. So I'm just blessed.
Okay. What has given you such longevity?
My grace, I think that, all it has to be the grace of God, because I tell you, personally, you know, back when I was 48 years old, I was always a hyper, worked hard. When you come off a farm and you build a pool, you're always running for your life. So I worked. At 48 years old, I ended up having to have heart surgery. And that worked out, that turned out very well. So that gave me a new direction. But longevity has come from, I got me to
longevity in business.
In business, it will be, it's just hard work, and you have to study. The main thing with longevity, Mr. Dudley and other people, you'll be surprised how much these people study and really has study. So that it might look like they don't, but I will guarantee you, Mr. Dudley is somewhere studying right now. That's about business. So study and then hard work and staying focused. There are many brilliant people in business, but what happens is, for most 80% of the time when we get in trouble, is that we lose focus. We try to do too many things. Mr. Dudley, staying focused, my case, working with him, staying focused is the key to longevity. That's if you stay focused and pray and make sure you focus on what you're doing, you have a chance. But most time when we get successful, we try to jump into too many things. That's when we get killed there.
Okay. All right. Okay. In what capacity? What can barbers and cosmetologists do to operate their businesses in a manner that is profitable?
Okay. You know, I'm glad you asked that because, obviously, our business, we work primarily with barbers and cosmetologists. But I want to just give you a little preface on that, what they can do to be profitable. I want to look at it two ways. In terms of the economic community, the black economic community, the barbers and cosmetologists, I would argue, are probably our backbone. We don't have a major car manufacturer that they say in nature, but we are very, very strong in those areas. You will find that barbers and cosmetologists have created more millionaires in the black community than probably any other occupation. Really any other. You take companies like North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company, most of your black insurance companies, those were started and came out of from barbers. We can talk about Madam C.J. Walker, the Joe Dudleys, people like that. So that those companies, I'm going at around the way, but those companies not only make profitable as businesses, but they also are the backbone of our communities. And I said to say that if they be profitable, they'll be more profitable. We must make sure that we support them because those are our main businesses. Now, what can they do to be more profitable? In our training classes, we work with them because many of them are great technicians, but they're working on their business training. So in most cases, what they have to do is that we find the biggest problem they have is in their paying, the labor cost. That's a typical problem in any business. Labor is using 6% of your money, so if you mess that up, you're going to use it not to be profitable. So in our training, we teach them how to be profitable in handling the commission, the other payments in their business, and that's the biggest, no other way that they learn how to be profitable. Many of them have, they use booth rental and other different programs, which are easy to run but may or may not create a profitable business for them. The other thing that we work with them on, area they can be profitable, is in merchandising and using their space. Unfortunately, with our businesses, we many times are not very keen on retail sales and merchandising, And that's unfortunate because the typical business barber or cosmetology business should be generating 25 to 30% of their money on retail products. We tend to fall short there, so we lose a good deal of our profitability there. So we'll work with companies to show them how to merchandise and do things like that whereby they can become more profitable. And the third area would be we show them how to utilize their space. Many times they will have beautiful shops and beautiful salons. They will have some, maybe four or five stations, only one station is being used. So it means that they're paying 80% rent and not getting any money out of it. So that the third area where they have to work on to be profitable, and we find that we can get most models is showing them how to use their space properly and not overbill those salons. We'd love to have beautiful salons, but they have to be making money. And most times you find very proper salons are probably about half a third the size of our salons. So we work with them in those three areas to help them be more profitable.
Okay. What about marketing?
Okay, marketing is another fun area. And for many years, because most of us come into business by trial and error, we many times have to learn the hard way. But marketing is an area where we have to do a lot of work with our salons on. The first thing we do, we get them accustomed to doing a 12-month marketing calendar. And the reason we do that is because too often, and we've done this too long in our businesses, we were like, when Mother's Day come up, we would say, oh, man, we need to have a Mother's Day sale. So we'll run and try to throw something together. And when Father's Day, we'll do that, or Thanksgiving. And usually we're behind the eight ball, we don't get the maximum impact of that marketing. And by having a marketing plan. So in our class, we work with all our students to develop a 12-month marketing calendar in which they plan out all the activities for the year. And that gives them a chance to put their budget together. It also gives them a chance to make sure that they can know where their money's coming in, they can plan to get additional money when things are slow, and all that helps them with the cash flow and the other profitability picture. But it comes out of a discipline of doing marketing. The other thing we do is go in the other direction. Most times people get into marketing, they get all these books and get all these different ideas about marketing. They might come up with 100 different things. So they're trying this, they're trying that, they're trying this, they're trying that. What we do, we teach them, don't jump around. Just get two or three things that you're good at and just do those consistently and you'll be successful, okay? And that's the main idea. Instead of trying to do a whole bunch of things and losing money, just get two or three things that you're going to do consistently, get everybody on your staff doing that, and you can be successful. So marketing is a big area where we really can make a mileage. Now, I'm excited about this because all the things you and I, things we're talking about, our businesses can make ground and be more profitable with them. So we're just excited because there's great room for us to make more money. And many salons, I'll give you some examples later on in the show, are doing very well. In fact, some of them have actually turned into million-dollar businesses by paying attention to their marketing.
Okay. What about structuring?
Well, structuring is very, very important. Many times we develop our businesses based on invitation. We'll see how somebody else has done theirs, and we'll do that. There's a lot of things we do is by habit and in our industry. One, for example, would be many times we close on Mondays. That's because that's sort of a norm in the industry. But you find a lot of popular salons that are closed on Monday. And we'll run hours from maybe 10 o'clock to maybe 5 o'clock. A lot of salons will do different hours where they run later in the evening because they know the individuals who work during the day will actually be off after 5 o'clock. If your salon is closed, you miss those people. So that structure of the business, we also find that because of not being comfortable many times with hiring and working with people, we find a bulk of our businesses will be one or two person businesses. And particularly, I would say the majority would be one person businesses. That's owner-operator. And those businesses, we call them left-hassle businesses, but we work with the owners to show them that actually you're losing a lot of money there because if you were to sell that business, it wouldn't have a lot of value because the person would say, okay, I will only give you some money for your equipment because when you walk out the door, your business walks out the door. And if we can teach them how to structure their business where they will have employees or have people working for them, those businesses automatically double, triple, or quadruple in value because of the fact that now there's somebody there, and then we teach them how to structure their business by making sure they document things, have the plans and things in order. Those businesses can go up to many times at another $250,000 value because they're structured properly. And that, those are things that we show them because they have not been exposed to talk about that. And so many times they'll work 30 or 40 years and walk away from the businesses and walk away from $250,000 and they don't even know it.
Okay. What is $250,000? That's a lot of money. That's, I believe, $250,000?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
$250,000, that's a lot of money. What is the best way for business owners to hire and pay people?
Well, we're speaking more in the cabotage and barber area. What we do, we have maybe three, possibly four different ways we hire people and pay them. We usually do particularly in our salons, ethnic salons, the booth rental is a very popular pay arrangement where an individual just simply pay the owner so much a week or a month for using a chair in the salon. That's probably the most prevalent way that we do that. And so that the stylist or barber is an independent business person, and they're pretty much, we call it rental because they're just renting that chair space in your salon. And a lot of our businesses opt for that because it gives the least liability on the owner in terms of what we think about it. But actually what happens is that's probably one of your it can turn out to be one of your less proper ways to run the business because you actually have no control over the individual because they're just renting space from you. And so in terms of building a wealthy business, that's probably not always the strongest way to do it in that case. But also some states, I think Pennsylvania and a couple other states are now facing, they've actually passed legislation where they've outlawed it because the government is concerned about collecting taxes. And so that in situations like that, they find that the owner is not responsible for collecting taxes, and they find it difficult to get it from the individual, so that they're now sort of looking to outlaw that and make it a responsibility of the owner, outlaw the booth rental so that they can collect those tax dollars. That's something that's really very important for our business people to look at because the IRS is really, they need money, so they're trying, they're going to come down hard on that. So you want to be careful about that. The other way we tend to run our businesses is on a commission basis, whereby the owner will pay the individual a commission on sale. Let's say that if it's a 50-50 basis, so if a service is a $100 service, the salon owner gets $50, and the cosmetologist will get $50, 50%. That's 50% of that service. And so on the popular schemes, a 50-50 is a popular scheme. Another one is 60-40, with 60% to the salon, to the stylist, and 40% to the salon owner. And some salons now are doing 40-60, whereby they're doing 40% for the stylist and 60% for the salon owner. That one, too, while it's very popular in our classes, we have to teach the business owners that it has some major drawbacks. First of all, even though it makes it easy for you to manage the salon, it's just that you really don't have to manage the stylist or the barbers. You look, most times you look at a situation where by the profitability of that salon is not that high, because if you put it out 6% to a person who does the service, it means you got 40% to run the business off of, and if you got 40 cents out of a dollar. If your rent is, say, 15%, now you're down to 25%. Then you pay for utilities and maintenance, things like that, so maybe another 10%. So now you're down to 15%. Then you pay your taxes, which is probably another 7%, 8%. So now you're down to 7%, 8%. If you take any sale or pay out of yourself, you go buy products and things of that nature, to face for the salon, you end up with no money, actually. So most products. Pardon me?
I said they're not really making much money after they do all that.
No, and that, we also, there's a rule of thumb that on the financial side of the business, we know that possible salons, 45% is probably the max you're going to be able to pay for all salaries and wages to make a profit in your salon in business. But that's a whole education that we're having to do in the industry now. You'll find most of the larger Caucasian salons, they're paying their average of about 35%. Top on that side where we're doing about 45-50%, and it's going to be hard to compete. And most of the time, we make our money by our own work so that we actually have a job and pay for somebody else, another place to work. But it's what we do business, and we've been doing it for years, but we're learning now how to be more profitable. And having said that, the salon and barber business are very profitable if they're structured correctly and you work with your numbers. And so in our classes, we teach that witnesses that don't speak French, they don't speak English, they don't speak anything but numbers. So if you look at the numbers, the business will tell you how to make money. And that's what we really work with in the class.
Okay. What are some of the ways they can work on having positive cash flow?
Okay.
The barber and hospitologist.
Right, right. Well, what they got to do is, first thing they got to, let me just take it just to give you a little background. First thing we have to think about that, okay, because what we do is that many times in our business classes and training, we don't have the business owners to understand that there are actually four kinds of money in a business. The four kinds of money are: you got the income money, you got the profit money, you got what we call the cash flow money, and you got the equity money. And in most classes, we don't talk about anything but the income money. But we forget about the other three. So that because the owner is not always conscious of the other three, he or she does not manage them, but that's where they lose their money at. So you find a not untypical situation where an individual will say, look, I handle a lot of money, but I don't have any money. And basically we track that back to the fact that they don't know that they have to set up actually four systems to handle four kinds of money in any given business. That's money on the income money, how to handle the profit money, how to handle the cash flow money, and how to handle the equity money. Now, having said that, the cash flow is the big one because even if you make a lot of money, if you can't pay your bills, you're going to be out of business. So the cash flow is very important since that person I come and say, Dr. Baylor, look at my business. It's profitable. Well, I understand that. Profitability is a measure. It's just a paper measure, which is good to talk about, but you can have a profitable business and have no cash. And that's a very typical situation. So that we train them that you got to realize the owner and manage that cash flow. Because when you tell the bill to do, you got to have cash to pay that bill. They don't take IOUs. You have to pay them. And so some of the things they can do is they have to make sure they run off and work off a budget. Okay, you can't guess it. It's like if you're driving a car and you don't, your gas gauge is not working. So you're guessing how much gas you got. You're going to run out of gas sometime. Okay, so the same thing. And too often we run those businesses by, okay, we keep writing checks to a bounce, okay, well, the banks love that because they don't really hit through all those fees, okay? But the first thing, you get a budget. Then we teach them to go back to what I was just talking to you a moment ago about, looking at the cost structure of your business. You can't pay out 60 cents on certain things and they expect to have money. It's not fair. It's only 100 pennies of a dollar. So we work on our budget, our cost structure, and we show them how to manage within that. And it becomes exciting because when they can see how to have money, it becomes a much more exciting business as opposed to every month trying to figure out who you can pay so you can pay somebody else, this type of thing. And then the other thing we do is, in terms of cash flow, is we ask them to change their thinking. Too often, Ms. Butler, we run our businesses this way. We say, okay, we're going to get our income, we're going to pay our expenses, pay everybody, and if whatever we have left over is going to be our profit. Well, we try to get them to think about it differently. Small businesses decide at the beginning of the year how much profit they want to make. Then they design everything else out of that. You find particularly your larger contagion salons, they will have, let's say, okay, this year we need to make 15% profit. So then they determine their pricing structure, their marketing plan, the whole management structure of making 15% profit, and they manage that on a weekly and daily basis. Most times, because we are not trained that way, we look at it, what is left over is going to be our profit. Unfortunately, in most cases, what is left over is usually nothing. So most times we're struggling trying to find a way to either sell our business or get somebody to make an investment or borrow money, and we sort of get frustrated with those businesses because we are sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul. And in our class, we teach them it doesn't have to be that way. If you change your thinking and go back and look at, okay, how much cash you need, how much you need, and then build everything off of that, then you manage to that, okay? And that makes the business work much better. Ms. Butler?
Oh, yes. So how can they build their businesses with the community?
Okay, good. Now, let me tie it in with the cash flow, Ms. Butler. You think, Mr. Dudley's daughter, baby daughter, has about, she has a spa, she has a chain of spas, she has about 90 employees.
Okay.
And like most, any business, I don't care whether it's Facebook, Dudley Products, the U.S. Congress, whatever, okay, you got a problem with cash flow, okay. So what she does is she knows, she's been trained. She knows what the role of the owner is, okay? And in our class, we bring the business people in. One of the things we address is, okay, what is the business supposed to do? What is your role as an owner? So owner of the business is supposed to make sure it's organized properly. he or she is supposed to make sure that building has the proper financial structure. And, of course, the third thing would be to manage the managers. Okay, now, the financial structure has to do with the fact that those bills have to be paid. They're going to come to you to pay those bills. So what she does is, let's say that she monitors her cash on an hourly basis for her different ones. Each one has a different account so that she actually uses a computer screen. She knows exactly how much money is being put in there, things of that nature. So let's say that she sees now she's going to be a little bit short on her payroll. She then is able then to go and have her managers run specials and things of that nature whereby they can actually get those monies in. But that's because she's managing the cash flow, okay? And I'm still getting to the community part. But that was the other part I forgot to mention earlier when I was talking about cash flow. In our classes with our business people, we teach them how they have to monitor their cash and how they can do special programs or motions to make sure that money is in to meet those bills and things of that nature, as opposed to all of a sudden go there, oh, my God, the light bills due. I don't have any money. Well, if it's due Monday and it's due Friday, you got a problem, this type of thing. Now, working in the community. Small businesses, many of our small businesses are not unlike other small businesses. I know many business people from billionaires on down. I know very few who don't have cash flow problems or need money, okay. But I know that a lot of them who are smart on how to get money and make money. Now, one of the ways that we teach in our class would be that a small business is blessed because they tend to have a relationship with their customers. And so what we have to do is find, and you find daily products, and many companies have used this, and Ms. Butler, you probably end up using this. But, all the money, everything you need for your business will come through your customers, the employees, okay? So that,
yes.
For the community, so let me give you an example. We have a former student who is a salon owner and a real estate person in Cincinnati, Ohio. She's a millionaire now. She just 1 year, she bought $1 million of property. Well, what she did was we taught her to work with our programs called programs, sell programs. Her mother died with breast cancer. Let me use this quick example. So what she does every year, she has an annual breast cancer awareness program, and she gets the customers in the community to help her, okay? She donates a portion of proceeds to breast cancer. I guess about 7 years ago she did a program. I'm just thinking, well, she does them every year. She actually ended up making, she made $17,000 on that program. Okay, and she donated a portion of that went to breast cancer, and then of course the portion had to go back into her business. Okay, in that regard, she had things during that program. She had things like a Mr. and Mrs. Salon. Her name of Salon is I think was DJ's Image. She had a contest. She had a sales campaign. She had a gambling house program. She had several different things. She got raffles for TVs and things like that that the business has donated. She had speakers from the Cancer Association. She had a banquet tickets. So she ended up, even before the program was actually conducted that night, she had done over about $17,000. Well, that actually helped her to get more customers, but also helped her with her bill for cash flow for that particular year. She was also able to get a lot of publicity for free because she donated money to the Breast Cancer Society, things of that nature. So that we teach all our students there to get involved. And our motive for doing that is not just for business, the business side of it, but when you help others, that's the way you make money. If we work with a client and their sole motivation is to make money, we know we're going to have a problem because usually they're going to end up with one customer that's in sales. But if they're in that business to serve people, they're going to get a lot of customers and they're going to make money. So that we teach all our students to go out and do things in the community. Right now, in our class we have in Charlotte, we work with a group in Charlotte for the last 12 months. One student is doing an obesity program. She's all over the country with that. She's got other cosmetologists involved, employees involved, and that's a very successful program. But it helps out. Her name is being all over the country. We have another one she's doing something with high blood pressure. We have another one doing heart disease for women. We have one doing something for battle women. On down the line, all these programs build businesses not only economically but also build them from a publicity point of view. They get all that free, and it's just a tremendous way to build your business and helping your community. And when you think about it, Walmart does it, Coca-Cola does it. All big businesses do that because they know that it's not just a way to make money, but also a way to get more customers and a way to grow your business that that goes past anything else that you can do. And so that's what some of the things we teach in our class, and we have projects. And actually, we work 12 months with our students in our salons and the barbers to do that type of thing. We have a 12-month curriculum. We walk them through those kind of promotions and show them how to build their businesses. And every time you do that, Ms. Butler, your business goes to another level.
Okay. All right. I have a question.
Okay.
Do you see a way that churches and businesses can work together in the community?
Oh, yeah. My God, yes, they do. In our communities, but it's even deeper than that. One of the big sort of, I guess it's not really a secret, but I have fun with this in my classes, is that many of the successful business people that you know of, people are surprised to find out that those individuals are very religious. And some of you probably would not be surprised. But even more than just being religious, they actually use the church model in running their businesses. Let me give you an example. If you think about Mary Kay Cosmetics, okay? And
yeah.
Most of the time we would not associate this with a business model, okay? But having been a former business professor, I think in terms of models. Okay. Mary Kay, her motto is God first, good family, good business. Okay. I like that you can see the model coming into play, okay? But have you ever seen an Mary Kay meeting?
Yes.
You probably seen them on television. You have singing, right?
Yeah, I attended the meetings and things like that.
Okay.
I went to one in Panama City, Florida.
That's like your praise service in a church, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They have things like, okay, Mary Kay will speak. That's like your minister. For many years in Dolly Parish, for example, still, Mr. Dolly is a senior pastor. For many years, my role was more like the associate junior pastor. And I'm using it, and I'm not in a kind of sense, but I'm saying that that's what we did. He talks and I talk. We made a lot of it by talking to the people. Then in a sales group, you have things like a count up, a countdown. People come up, we recognize how much sales they have, like in Mary Kay. She has them coming on stage. This person did, she made gold so-and-so in the city. Okay, that's a parallel in the church there. Then we have people to recruit. That's another parallel in the church. Then we talk about how much money that we did. That's another parallel in the church. And we could go on and on. But more than that, then, in the church, you would talk about church programs. Now, what I just talked to you a moment ago about the business and the communities, okay,
uh-huh.
The businesses do what they do, then can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay, the word programs. We teach out, so businesses, what they do, then, they actually, when you go to the next level, you don't just sell products, you sell programs. And you then, with those programs, you get your customers, you get your employees and the community to help you with your business because you're selling the program. A good example of that would be the Girl Scouts. The Girl Scout organization does not sell cookies, more or less. The Girl Scouts sell the Girl Scout program. You and I sell the cookies. And
okay.
That's another level in businesses. Now, for example, with your radio program, of course, you can sell advertising time and things of that nature. That'd be selling your product, but you also sell a program whereby individuals like myself and other people will gladly help you when you design a program to help you build your business. And that's what comes like Mary Kay, Dolly Products, Coca Cola, Facebook. All those companies sell programs, and they get they convert their customers from just being customers to actually become salespeople for them.
Okay, thank you for saying, you would do that if I had a program, you say?
Right, yeah, so you could, everybody wants to help when you have a program. That's why we, listen, just think about this. School program, church program, Girl Scout program. Listen to that word program. That's not just an accident. Leaders understand that when you design programs, you get people there to help you, but they can only help you if they have a program that they can understand and it has meaning to them. So the whole idea behind business, church, anything else, people will help you if they can find meaning in what you're trying to do.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Why we're putting out stuff. Okay.
All right. I understand that. I have a caller on the line. I'm going to ask. I have some callers on the line, more than one. I'm going to ask them if they have a question.
Okay.
Caller, do you have a question? Caller. Okay. I think they're just listening.
Okay.
There's two of them, so I guess I'll just call them because I put them on Facebook. What is the purpose of a business?
Yeah, that's one we have a lot of fun with. You asked me earlier what was probably the secret to longevity with Dudley, and I told you being focused.
Yes,
so when we work with business people, one of the things we try to do is get them to work with us on the idea that A business can be for many things. But as the leader of that business, you got to get something clear that people can focus on, okay? And business experts would agree with me. But most of the time I ask people, what do you say the purpose of business is? They're going to say, well, it's to make money, to hire people, to help people. I mean, a whole bunch of things, which are correct. But the real purpose, Ms. Butler, of a business is to create customers. And so when you're doing a business, you're creating customers. And I bring that point out in my classes because I have my owners and employees doing all kind of things other than business, because they don't know that the business is about creating customers. So that if you're at the mall and you see somebody walking, as a business person, your job is to find a way to create that person and make them a customer for you.
All right.
If you're in a salon and everybody's sitting around saying we're in business, we're not in business. We're just sitting here. Okay?
Okay.
The business would be we are trying to create a customer. So the purpose of if a business does not create customers for you, you want to close that down. But if you think about it, if it creates customers, you get everything else. You get the money, you get everything else you're talking about. And without the customers, you get none of that. So what we do, we get everybody in that business focused on creating customers. That's doing business.
All right. Well, thank you for all the information that you've given my listeners. I hope they have benefited, because that's what this show is about, getting people the word, educating people. It's also a variety show. I have different type of artists and different businesses on. And I thank you. I thank you very much, Dr. Willie Bailey, for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Okay, Ms. Butler, if you want to get in contact with our class, we hold in different cities.
Sure.
I was having a call Ms. Joni Hayes, and at the company here, and we'll be doing classes. We want to do 100 cities. We want to at least do 200 or 300 business people in those cities. Our goal this year, Ms. Butler, is to create 100 jobs, get 100 people hired, 100,000 people hired.
All right.
President Obama is doing his thing, but in our communities, we can do it. And this comes out of the whole notion that Mr. Daly challenged me. He said, look, why is it that Walmart can hire 1 million people and we have trouble hiring one?
That's true.
Do you know, Ms. Butler, that Walmart as a company probably has as many employees as most of our black, you take all the black business in the country combined, they probably have as many employees as we would all to put together?
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
And
okay.
So,
right.
But we can do that. So, and we know how to do that. So we're training people. And in Charlotte, North Carolina, we've been there about 3 or 4 months. And I'm sure we've at least worked with Sloan there. They've hired at least about 40, 50 people. But our goal is to get 100 in 100 cities. That give us, that give us those numbers that we're looking for. As a case
okay.
of view. Anyway, you call Ms. Hayes, and the number would be.
What's her number?
Okay, let me give that to you, please. And I want to thank you for letting me come on. I just hope we've been some help to someone.
Yes, sir.
Okay, just let me give you a number. And you can also contact me. My number will be 336. Let me give you my number. 336-451-9648.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And
thank you.
Do it, okay. Thank you and God bless, okay?
God bless you, Dr. Willie Bailey. Thank you, sir. All right, listeners, we're going to go to Mr. Clyde Anderson, Camp Kenny commercial.
An at-risk youth is defined by statute as a child under the age of 18 who meets at least one of the following three requirements: is absent from home for at least 70 consecutive hours without parental consent, or is beyond parental control such that his slash her behavior endangers the health, safety, or welfare of the child or any other person, as a substance abuse problem for which there are no pending criminal charges relating to the substance.
When you're searching for the latest news on entertainment, the economy, business, technology, and creative arts, choose
the Digital Conglomerate Magazine.
Not only do they give you all the latest information, but they're there for you 24/7, baby, giving you the 411 and all you need to know, baby. Visit the Digital Conglomerate Magazine online. Just Google us, baby. We're everywhere.
All right, listeners, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. We had on the show Dr. Willie Bailey. Dr. Willie Bailey works with Dudley Corporation, the hair care company. And I'm glad you tuned in to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Let's not forget Power of the Bee by author John Watts. Let's not forget Butterfly Cosmetics back for April Smith Holt. Her website is www.butterflycosmetics.com. Let's not forget, again, Power of the Beat, Mr. John Watts, that he's the author of that book. Do not forget Miss Angelina Squire, the author of the book, Tune In to the Right Voice, Let the Voice of God Be Louder Than Your Voice to Struggle. Thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Have a good night, everyone.
What's the difference between bacon,
bacon,
and
bacon?
It's in the prep, because flimsy microwave bacon can taste meh. That's why Wendy's oven bakes their bacon for crispy slices of applewood smoked bacon that taste. Place it on fresh, never frozen beef, and you've got a junior bacon cheeseburger. It's the star of Wendy's 4 for $4 meal. Yeah, for just $4, you get a JVC, 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke. Not to mention that crispy bacon that makes the 4 for $4 so deliciously different. At participating Wendy's for a limited time, offer includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii. Fresh beef available in the contiguous U.S. and Canada.